because we have a lot of people who are coming on to share with us their experiences, and we want to make sure that we have opportunities for everyone to be able to talk about their own experiences, ask questions.
There's good.
So I want to just encourage everyone who does know me, I'm Lisa Smith, the Chief Program Officer, and I get the pleasure of working with your wonderful, wonderful co-chairs, Laura Gilman from Kansas City and Victoria Pibnick from JFSLA. And they spend a lot of time thinking about what's going to be really important and beneficial to this group, which is our largest affinity group. Today we have around 50 people who said they were coming on. So I'm going to be busy letting people in. Just make sure that you mute yourselves during this when you want to talk. You can unmute yourself and right-click and change your name, please, to your first name and the town where you are working, so we all know where everyone is calling in from. That would be great. So with that being said, take it away, Laura or Victoria. I'm not sure who's starting.
I had to take myself on mute for a second. Hi, everybody. We're so excited to see you. It's been a minute. I feel like we're all in this crazy, crazy world together. And I just want to acknowledge the fact that we have all been in this for half a year already, which seems like a lifetime ago. So today we will be talking about virtual programming, and we have incredible, incredible panelists who are going to be presenting. And it'll give us all a chance to discuss what's going on with virtual programming around the United States and Canada. So the folks joining us today is Jessica from Self Help from New York, Nikki from Baltimore, Nora from Chicago, and then Brenda from Montreal, Meredith from Cincinnati, and Amy from Atlanta. So Laura, you want to start?
Absolutely. We're really grateful for to everyone for volunteering to share. And we're gonna first start with Brenda from the Cummings Center because she's graciously given us some time, even though she has to hop off. So our goal today is really to talk about virtual programming, what's working, best practice, places where people have tripped and want to prevent the rest of us who are just learning, from tripping ourselves. So Brenda, take it away. And if you want to introduce yourself, we'd love for you to do that too. Still on mute.
Nice to meet everybody. Am I still muted? No, I'm okay now, right? Okay.
You're good.
So I can't believe your group is so big. It's has to be the biggest one I've ever attended, really. It's congratulations to everybody for this great venture. Unfortunately, Beth, who is really the Beth Feinberg is the head of the director of Social Service Department, and she's really responsible for the Holocaust survivors. She's on vacation right now, so I'm just hopping on because I am the director of programming and communications, and I've been responsible for all the virtual learning that we've been doing. Virtual learning for us includes two fields. It's the virtual library that we had already existed, but at a much smaller scale than what we have now, and we recently started doing everything by Zoom. For us, we found that Zoom was the easiest platform for our seniors to go on to. We investigate into other ones. There's some that are better, but not necessarily as easy to go on to. So we started offering virtual programming, live virtual programming as of in mid-April. Our building closed mid-March. Initially, we started doing the essential services, which was care calls, providing care calls and seeing if people needed help. We set up an emergency helpline so people could call in if they needed food, if they needed transport, whatever they needed. And then we realized that all these people who were isolated, the rule here was is if you were 70 and over, you had to stay home. You weren't allowed to go out, which made it very difficult for a lot of people for groceries. But not only that, what were they doing at home? A lot of our population are very vibrant elder people. We had people that were still in their 90s that were coming. I have one lady, she's 92. She used to go to every single exercise class every morning. She went on hikes. She went cross-country skiing on Fridays. We have very active seniors. So we deemed it as being an essential service to provide the virtual learning library. The virtual learning library was only by members at the beginning. It's through we developed this through grants from three different foundations, actually. Three different foundations sponsored us. And it was only if you were a member. We opened it up free to all the community, like not just the Jewish community, anybody who wanted to have access to it. We advertised to people that they can go and access. We had 150 programs at that time. We're now up to over 250 videos that we have in the virtual library. So we also offered it for free. One of the reasons being is because we got volunteers to support us. So they gave their times for free, but it was a learning platform for us. We never did Zoom before. So it was learning for the staff and also for the presenters to become more comfortable with it. And I always give the very funny example of one of our well-known speakers. When he first went on Zoom, his wife came in while he's presenting to like hundreds of people saying, "Honey, do you have the password?" It's like, oh my gosh. And he's going like this, like, "Go away, go away." And then his phone was ringing all the time. And then his background was very disruptive. So we learned along the way that we had to really practice with our presenters and we had to prompt them exactly what to do beforehand. We also had a script telling people the etiquette of Zoom. So like, you know, please mute everybody. Please do not share your screens. Some people like sharing their screens. All of a sudden people are going, what's happening? So there's a whole list of etiquette things that we have to do. Going forward, so we did this for the whole summer. And now going forward, in the fall, as of August 24th, actually, we're going to launch our new fall season. And we are going to start charging. So we're hoping by now that most people are more comfortable with Zoom. Not only our presenters, but our members. And we have right now over 80 programs that we are going to be offering virtually. I made a decision in June, you know, because we had to start planning and everyone was saying, what are we doing? What are we doing? And I made the decision, not knowing what was going to happen, to do everything virtually. And I'm very happy I made the decision. It seems that we are going to be like this for a while, for quite a while. I even anticipate at least up until, you know, March of the coming year, because we have very vulnerable seniors. So in a smaller building, you know, I don't want to have a lot of people together in one area. Some of the difficulties that we have is it will be having people sign up virtually for the programs, but then also getting the links for Zoom. Some of the problems we encountered was we would send the link for Zoom, for example, and then people would lose it. So we had to get people to man the phones just to help these people give the proper Zoom link. We had to get volunteers to teach those people who've never, hardly ever used a computer. And they spent, you know, like an hour and a half with some people to get them on to be able to use the virtual library and to be able to register on Zoom. Some of the other problems that we had were technical problems. Zoom does not hear music and a voice at the same time. If you use just your microphone from your laptop, it's either one or the other. So you can't do both. So we have a music therapist, for example, that was trying to do music therapy with music in the background, and you'd either hear her or the music. We had to find the right microphones so that it would work properly. We tried like five different microphones before we found out the right combination. Same thing with our exercise teachers. They're doing exercises in their own homes. It's very funny because if you look at their living room, half of it's the living room and half of it they made into a mini gym because they're exercising and that's where they're doing it. But we had to get also for them the right kind of equipment as well. So those were some of the challenges that we had. Aside from the program that we did, we also continued to give programming to people who have dementia. We have two different programs. There's a drop-in program and a day program that people used to come. It's not only to support the people who are living with dementia, but also their caregivers. And we were able to continue to give this, giving one-on-one on over Zoom and also group sessions. And the group sessions were great because the caregivers were able to take like 15, 20 minutes to just go make a meal or just go take a quick shower. well, you know, they were not able to do that. So, I have an echo. We also have teachers. We also have volunteer teachers to teach people how to not just get on the library, but to get on Zoom and to continue to we have pamphlets now. Like, we have handouts, and we're also looking at making a YouTube video to instruct people on how to use our Zoom platform. So these are all these things that we're trying to support people with. In the future, when this COVID pandemic thing is over and we're able to go back in the building, we will continue to use the virtual platform as well. We will do live and the virtual platform because we have bad weather here in Montreal, especially in the winter. If there's a couple of snowflakes that fall, people don't come. They're worried that they're going to fall. There's going to be ice. So this way, people won't have to worry about transport. They won't have to worry about parking. And it's going to be a lot easier for them to access our programs. Also, we film our live programs. We put them into our virtual library. And then at a later time, if somebody registered for, let's say, a series of three lectures and they're only able to attend two, we can then give them special permission in the library to just see the one that they missed. So there's all different ways that you can use the virtual platform. I just actually spoke to one of the social workers who's responsible for the programming for the Holocaust survivors. And she's going to be using some of the people that we have to give live Zoom presentations to her Holocaust survivors. What they do is they do a little bit of social interaction for around half an hour at the beginning, and then they have a presenter that will give an interesting talk. So we have volunteers, for example, one man, he used to be an accountant, and he offered his services so that he can present to them and then they can ask questions if they want. Other people were photographers, and then he will present some of his photography to people. So volunteers are a great asset, and that's what we have been using a lot of. Now going forth into the fall season, we're going to be using paid specialists, and we're going to ensure that the cost of our programs is going to cover the cost of our specialists. So that's about it.
Brenda, we have so many people with curious questions.
I'm sorry, I didn't see.
That's okay. It's a lot to talk and monitor, so we're happy to do that. So we have questions about how much the fee is to be a member at the Cumming Center. Monthly, is it yearly?
So I have to tell you, usually it's only $45 for an annual membership. However, this year what we did, because everyone is suffering people financially, we extended anybody who had membership of last year, we are extending their membership for free up until March 31st. Anyone who's new, we're only charging $25. It's a reduced price from the beginning of August 24th to March 31st. So even if people just want to use the virtual library, it's only going to cost them $25, which is really an amazing thing. And then our courses are all very reasonable. So for example, if people...
Hold on, Brenda.
Yeah.
We have four other people that have to go. So let's
go ahead.
Answer the questions. Because
we have
so
ahead.
Much to say. You probably could have spent the whole time doing it. But
I'm sorry. Go.
What, no, no, no. It's... But yeah.
Okay. What other questions were there?
So the question was about subscription. Okay, so it's $25.
Yes. A yearly subscription.
Great. Brenda, do you have courses in other languages?
So we're trying to be as multilingual as we can. Mostly all of them are in English. We have some in French as well. And we will be offering some in Russian. It's not up and running yet, but yes, we do have some in Russian. And eventually I want to get Spanish courses as well. So we're going to be doing more multilingual.
So we'll stay in touch with you as that stuff unfolds. And then Tatiana asked about screening and training volunteers remotely.
So a lot of our volunteers, we have them from a very large volunteer base from before. Any volunteer that comes that wants to present a program, we ask them for an outline of their program. We do a trial period with them first to see how they're doing. And I'm telling you, not everyone's able to do it. So really, you do have to screen them.
Yeah.
And then any resources, Brenda, that you would be willing to share for us to distribute among the network, we would be glad
I have my draft now of the program guide. It's a mini brochure that we're going to be handing out. So I will forward that to Lisa. And Lisa, then you can distribute it later on to whoever you want. It's going to be offered to everybody. I mean, now that everything is virtual, anybody can access it.
Fabulous.
Thank you so much, Brenda. We appreciate you. We know you have to hop off. Thank you so much for
your
time.
Thank you very much. It was nice seeing you all, and congratulations on everything that you're doing.
Sending you lots of well wishes.
Okay, Lisa, you know where to get me.
I do.
Okay, bye.
Thank you so much, Brenda.
Great. Well, next, we're just going to move along. Next, we have Nikki from the Meyerberg Center in Baltimore. Nikki, thank you for agreeing to share. We'll give you like just a little bit under 10 minutes.
Okay, no problem. I'll just kind of dive right in here. And I am going to share my screen because I thought it would be easier to share with you guys kind of what we are now offering our members. So we're a nonprofit community center for older adults located in Northwest Baltimore, Pikesville area. And we actually have this beautiful art studio. So we're sort of known for our art programs, humanities programs. We have a state-of-the-art fitness center, personal trainers. We have a weekly Bagel Boys program that has over 200 guys that would get together every Tuesday.
Wow.
And then what has really helped us transition to this new digital lifestyle for our seniors is our Technology Hub, which was started in 2017. So our seniors were already participating in classes on iPhone and Android basics. Grocery delivery apps has been really helpful, food delivery apps. So we've been able to help our seniors utilize these apps to get by through this pandemic. And Melanie standing there is our technology concierge, and she is part of our staff. So she is providing tech support. So when we closed our building in early March, we kind of did a lot of the similar things that Brenda said. We made wellness calls first, and were able to provide resources as needed. But what we really found is that most of our members missed each other. So we needed to find a way to connect to them, and learned about Zoom, started to teach ourselves Zoom, taught our staff, instructors. And you know, it's worth mentioning that a lot of our instructors are 60 or older. So it was also, we had to deal with the digital divide there. So we found it actually very successful system that we had created to provide the tech support people needed for these virtual programs, and began offering virtual programs late April. We did have some recorded classes, but we found that the live classes were so much more interactive and people enjoyed them even more. So to date, we are actually offering over 40 weekly classes to 900 participants from all over the world. In fact, we just had a guy from Scotland who signed up for the classes. He learned about us through one of his friends. And we are providing the recorded versions of those classes. And on this page here, it's meyerberg.org/explore-our-programs. You can see sort of like a quick demo of all of our classes, everything from
water up to our waist.
So what we turn blue, and it will automatically
class.
Be added.
You know, activists
from
and politicians.
Bagel Boys class.
Two.
Fitness.
Times the what do you do with it?
And so the comment earlier about the sound, my background's actually in music. So when it came to figuring out how to get the music and the voice into the computer, I'm happy to share what has worked for us, because we did have to get some devices in order to make that happen so that they can hear themselves in the room, the instructors themselves, and see everybody. We have everybody up on a big screen. So it makes it a better experience for the instructor as well to be able to see everybody. As you can imagine,
What did you use?
So most computers have just a headphone and audio that are like one jack. So you have to get a splitter, first of all, so that you can have two signals going in. We actually use a small mixer. It's a 10-channel mixer, so that that controls the audio coming out of Zoom, so that the instructors can hear it in the room, and it controls the levels for the music and the instructors using like a wireless system. And I can certainly give you more details on that and kind of take pictures and show you what that looks like later if you guys have any questions. So yeah, you know, it's not a sustainable model for us, especially as a nonprofit, to be able to pay our instructors and staff. And so we've started charging for programs. We started August 3rd and we set up monthly subscriptions. So we do have an annual membership of $59, and then that gets you member pricing on packages. Our gold is our all access. So for $36 a month, you can access everything, including all the recorded versions of the classes, which we found has been a really big hit. People like being able to watch them at their convenience. Silver is a limited fitness package. And then of course we have just the Bagel Boys, who they really just want to hang out with each other. So we got like 100 guys that get together Tuesdays, Fridays. And so that's included with our Bagel Boys. There is a non-member rate. It's a little bit more, but we still have some people who prefer to just, you know, forego the membership and pay the monthly rate as a non-member. And then one last thing I wanted to show you is that we've actually found a way to make it super simple to manage registrations for Zoom. We do not use the Zoom registration because we were running into that problem where people were losing the email with the personalized link. So now after they get a subscription, they can go to Virtual Center login. It takes them to this page. They put in their phone number, their birth month and day. It locates their account. They click on their account and it takes them directly to the events for the day. So they can sign up for any classes. I actually have for this account, it's the all access plan. So everything's on here. And I can scroll through to the days in the future to be able to sign up for any classes. And 15 minutes before class time, I don't know if we happen to hit one that's coming up soon. What time is it now?
It's 2:45 or something. 10.
Yeah, so let me just show you real quick. So you just click sign up. And this link here takes them directly to Zoom. So they don't have to copy a link. We don't have to send them a link. It's right here. They click join video, or they can check out the audio. The call info is there too. The on-demand button takes them to the catalog with all of the videos. And they can go directly to these videos and watch them. And they're dated.
Oh my gosh. Nikki, how much money did this website cost you all to make?
So that is actually through a software called Schedules Plus. Hmm. So we did have to set up on our website the access buttons, which wasn't really a problem. But once they click that button, it then takes them to the Schedules Plus side. And that's what controls our registrations.
I like that.
Wow.
Yeah, so I it was developed by Deb Nussbaum, who started Schedules Plus, and she was so moved by the way that we had set things up on our website originally. So it's modeled after what we found was successful for us. So she had us do the beta testing, and I think we're one of the first to actually put it into play.
Right.
Very cool, Nikki. Thank you so much. Does anyone have questions? We've got shout outs for the Bagel Boys.
Yeah, I see
for
that.
Sure.
Yeah, it's that's an impressive setup program, it seems. I don't know. Do people feel overwhelmed by that when they saw that, or feel like it's something they could manage in their offices, a slight version of it?
I would say on the administrative time side, it does take some learning. You almost have to think mathematically sometimes about these registrations, especially if you have a lot of different memberships and subscription plans and who has access to what. But once you get used to it and your team gets trained, it's not so bad. And certainly on the user, the front end side, it is very simple to use.
Okay. Interesting.
Nikki, and there was one more question. What are the costs associated with Schedule Plus?
Good question. It is an annual fee, and I can tell you that I believe it's still under $1,000 a year, which is incredible for a registration system like this. It's possible that the rates have gone up. We've been using this software for many years, so but you can find it, Schedules Plus.
Okay, terrific. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you so much, Nikki. Thank you. So now we're going to have Jessica from Self Help in New York share about what they're doing.
Hi, everyone. I hope you're doing well during this time. So just to give a little bit of background about Self Help in the Virtual Senior Center. So it was developed around 10 years ago, the overall program that we've used, and it's an online face-to-face interactive program where participants are able to join classes through our interface and connect to Zoom without having to use a Zoom link or a password or things like that. And they're able to do exercise programs, discussion-based programs, things like that. So the whole goal of the Virtual Senior Center is to reduce social isolation and loneliness, and we've seen it really flourish during this time. And around 4 years ago, the Russian program was started. So we have a Russian Virtual Senior Center program, a bilingual Russian Virtual Senior Center program, and an English-speaking program for Holocaust survivors. So we have different volunteers and different partnerships with organizations across New York to produce content and to get participants joined onto our platform. So through this pandemic, we've been able to expand and reach out to organizations across the country to have them join on this platform. Before, it was normally just self-help clients that were using this, and now we're able to really do a lot of outreach and get clients from all over the country. So in the beginning, when we were first starting around 2 years ago with the English-speaking Holocaust Survivor platform, we were able to give devices out to our participants through self-help, but unfortunately we were not able to do home visits and go into the homes and really show them the instructions. So as of right now, we're sort of asking our clients who are going to sign on if they have tablets or devices that have a webcam, microphone, their own internet connection, things like that. So we have our own interface that we've been able to build over the course of 10 years. And they're able to sign through the different programs that way. So they're able to join 5 minutes before a program starts, and it connects them to this larger Zoom meeting. And we have over 100 facilitators that we work with across all the different platforms. And we have someone that works with our facilitators and trains them and screens them so that we can ensure the best possible classes for our participants. We don't have a cap on the number of people that are able to go, and there isn't an advanced sign up that is needed. Our calendar is constantly changing, and we're able to work with different museums across New York and things like that. So it's bringing a wide range of content to them. So we've been able to get about 30 new referrals and onboard people through from March until now. And we've also been able to expand our Russian platform. So we're able to offer hundreds of classes in Russian over the course of a few months, which has been really great for those users. And a lot of them have felt that this time has been really great to sort of bond with one another. And a lot of these participants had never met one another in person, and they're able to find that camaraderie over the computer. And it's just a really beautiful community that I've been able to be a part of. So a lot of the classes are discussion based or interactive, and we work with personal trainers, things like that. I have different emails that I could always send out of what makes for a good referral for a client and the actual form. And as of right now, we're currently grant funded through the end of December, and it may continue after December. So we're currently doing all of the installations over the phone and working with different volunteers, both English speaking and Russian speaking to do those installations. And all we require is that they download Zoom onto whatever device they're using. And then we create a login information for our platform.
Jessica, we have some questions about what platform do you use, the fee associated, and what it would be like for someone outside of New York to get connected.
Sure. So we created our own platform. So it's our own website that we've been able to use. And we just have Zoom connected through that interface. So Zoom is at the base of our platform, and that's how we're able to connect. And for the process of someone outside of New York to sign up, I can always send the referral form, and we'll be able to work with your organization to get your client onboarded. I do have to say it is a little bit harder to find Russian-speaking volunteers, so there is a little bit of a delay with the Russian-speaking platform in that regard. And then, I'm sorry, what was the other question?
A fee? Is there a fee associated with it, Jessica?
So as of right now, we're grant funded, so I don't have a particular number after the grant life. So we're trying to work out that number as well. And as soon as we hear anything, we'll definitely be able to relay that to you.
Any other questions? Thank you so much, Jessica.
Well, my question was, what is the grant cover? Does it cover, you know, your salaries, or does it cover the tablets, or does it cover the, you know, I don't know, the instructors?
So all of our instructors are volunteers. So they volunteer with us. I believe the grants cover the subscription basis for our clients.
Oh.
I don't know what that number is. I don't unfortunately work with the grant in that sort of layout. So I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does, yeah.
This is kind of a unique opportunity. You know, Jessica, you mentioned Russian speaking volunteers. Like, all of my clients always tell me about their cousins in Brighton Beach. Like, they're always telling me about, you know, so I think this is kind of a cool opportunity. We don't have a ton of Russian speakers in Kansas City, but there are across North America a lot of Russian speakers. So it would be interesting, you know, as you guys kind of think about expanding, you don't have to just rely on, you know, the New York Russian speaking population, which might be a cool opportunity. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you.
Jessica, are you guys doing any home visits?
As of right now, we're not. I think they're making only if it's absolutely necessary. I haven't done any home visits since March, but yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So next we have Nora Bergman from CJE Senior Life in Chicago, who's going to share with us about what they're doing in Chicago.
Hi there, everybody. So we are doing a whole variety of things. We are also not seeing clients and haven't been since March. So everything's moved pretty much to the phone or Zoom. So a lot of reassessments and well-being checks and counseling happening over the phone. And then we've got about 8 different support groups that are happening on a combination of Zoom and conference call, just depending on what the group members can work with. So there's definitely challenges week to week. Our staff are a mix of technological skills as well, so it's can be challenging on both ends of it for the survivors in the groups and for certain staff members. So that's sort of an ongoing challenge. But that is what we are doing now. I did want to share with you guys, one of the things that we've been working on a lot is trying to get our forms into a good electronic format, because when our care managers were meeting with clients in their homes or in the office, it was mostly on paper. And that's been something that's been really a struggle for us, trying to decide whether to do some sort of web form or some sort of electronic health record, or to just create fillable PDFs. We're just having trouble with that across the board. Even just creating fillable PDFs has been complicated because our staff have different versions of Adobe, and just trying to figure out what everyone has and what everyone's doing has been more complicated than you'd think it would be. So that's one thing that we're sort of being challenged by right now and trying to figure out, especially because, as people have said, we don't think we're going to be going back to the office or seeing people in person anytime, especially soon. what else? We've got a friendly caller program that's really grown a lot. We actually had hired someone right before the pandemic started to do outreach to clients who are in rehab or who have trouble getting out of their homes. But now she's actually come on full time and is able to do outreach to many more clients than we would have been able to before while everyone's sort of home alone. So that's been really good. And we are piloting Uniper, which I'm sure some of you have heard about. So we've started that. We've got about 70 clients onboarded now. And it's been sort of up and down. Getting it installed was a little bit tricky because they opened up a few new options. So before it was a Uniper technician coming to install, and then they created a mobile version that people could use on a computer or tablet or any internet connected device. And they also were offering a sort of self-install option where they would mail you the kit and then send instructions. And it was supposed to be pretty simple, but there was a lot of trouble with that. Either people's family members who were going to help them weren't visiting as often as they thought, or their caregivers weren't able to do it, or it just wasn't going well. So it's been sort of a slow onboarding process, but we do now have close to 70 people installed and starting to use it. We're seeing a lot of different rates of usage. So some people are using it a lot, like, you know, every day, multiple hours, and some people not so much yet. So we're sort of monitoring that as we go and doing outreach to those clients that seem like they might need a little bit more help, and really trying to get going with that. We're also, we've got a couple of peer managers who are in the process of developing some new curriculums for classes that will happen over the Uniper platform. So it's basically a Zoom-based platform. So other people could also join, but we're doing it with the Uniper clients in mind. CJE, so not exactly the Survivor program, but CJE as a whole has also developed a lot of online programming. They call it the CJE Cyber Club, and that's all available on the website. Our program serves mostly Russian-speaking clients, so none of that content that they've developed is in Russian. So we're going to start working with them to do some voiceover recordings to get some of that content in Russian so that it can be more accessible for our clients and other Russian speaking older adults in the Chicago area. So that's another big project that's going on. And then the last thing is that we're pretty excited that we've developed a new position that's sort of, like other people have said, it will be sustainable even once we are able to go back, because we want to be able to continue these virtual programs to reach more people. But it was sort of born out of the pandemic, but it's sort of a virtual programs coordinator, systems coordinator. So someone who can really be dedicated to helping us build digital and electronic infrastructure. So things like the forms and figuring that stuff out, providing support to clients that need help figuring out Zoom or whatever it may be. And then also sort of managing our Uniper pilot. And we have a grant that's also going to fund a PFMI Pro pilot, which I don't know if you guys have heard about that, but it's an assessment and intervention tool that's sort of, it's an app, so it's all digital. So sort of managing all of the digital and virtual programming that we've got going on.
So the PFMI Pro, I just wanted to say, has a partnership with NJHSA, and we did a webinar probably around, I don't know, a month and a half ago, and another one's coming up in September if you want to learn more about it. But JFCS of Pittsburgh is the one who started that, and they are now offering it, you know, to people nationwide. Yeah. Anyway, just thought I'd say that since you mentioned it.
Nora, I got a question about a fee. Is there currently a fee for CJE Senior Life clients to participate in the in these virtual options?
The Cyber Club? I do not believe so. I think you can go on the website and access that. I don't believe that there's a fee.
Gotcha, gotcha. Any other questions for Nora in Chicago?
Can anyone join your programs, or do they need to be CJE clients?
So for our particular programming for the survivors, it's our clients. I can ask the, it's the community engagement department that's doing the larger cyber club. So I'm not sure exactly what their guidelines are, but I can ask and let you know, and then you can let everyone know.
Terrific. Great.
Thanks so much, Nora. Thank you so much for sharing. Thanks. So next up, we have Meredith Davis with JFS in Cincinnati. Meredith, take it away.
I remembered to unmute myself. So I'll be pretty quick because I think some of the things that we're doing are some of the same things that you guys are doing. Uniper, we're having a really similar experience to how CJE has seen it. We've installed Uniper in 25 homes. The early feedback we've been getting is very positive. One of our survivors is even facilitating his own program that people can join from all over. That was an exciting thing that I got to hear about from him today. So he thinks that we should install Uniper for everybody. I said we'll get there eventually. We've seen a little bit of a capacity issue for our staff in trying to develop our own Cincinnati-focused programming to deliver through Uniper. It's definitely something that's high on the list of things that we want to do in the next few months. We have moved our Cafe Europa programs to a virtual setting. The first one we did was for our Russian speakers. We decided to use Skype for that because most of our Russian speakers were already comfortable using Skype because it's one of the main ways that they stay in touch with family overseas and each other. Some lessons we learned from that were to go through the etiquette rules pretty regularly so that it continues to go smoothly and you don't have a lot of people talking over each other. So I think since that lesson was learned, it's been going really well. We were able to build on that to do something similar for our English speakers. For that, we're trying to do it via FaceTime. We picked that option because the folks who are graduates of our tablets and technology program knew some of how to use FaceTime already. It would be easier, we think, to accept a call from the facilitator rather than clicking on a link. Some things that we ran into with that were a need to update several people's iOS systems so that they would have the most recent version and that things would work better. It's also limited to the number of people that you can have on a call. I think maybe it's 7 is the most number of people you can have on a call. So that's great for small groups. Doesn't work as well for like our Russian speaking group usually has 25 to 30 people on that. And so we're trying lots of things to see what sticks. One of the challenges that we've had is the Cafe Europa program that we have been doing in a nursing home locally that has most of our Jewish population chooses to go there when they need skilled nursing. We're still not able to go in there at all. They're still isolating all of their residents pretty much to their rooms. So we're really limited and facing a lot of barriers towards continuing to supplement the activity needs and the social needs and the PCTI needs of the residents there. We did recently purchase a couple iPads to leave at the nursing home, but it relies a lot on their staff to facilitate the programming, especially for those who have more cognitive challenges and aren't going to initiate that or even ask for it on their own. And then we're also trying to do some activity bag deliveries. So some of the activities that we would do together in person, you know, celebrating holidays, things like that. We're trying to just deliver those so that people can do them individually, including some sweet treats and cards and clear instructions with lots of pictures on how to complete different activities. I know today we bought a whole bunch of really beautiful calendars to celebrate Rosh Hashanah and the New Year. So I think that will be an exciting and unique thing to do. We do have a newsletter that goes out every other month. That's something we've done for a long time. Since I started in March, I've tried to see kind of what's useful in the newsletter and what maybe isn't as useful. It tends to be like 10 to 12 pages, which can be a lot to get. We've tried a few different things as far as translation of everything into Russian or just a summary of the newsletter in kind of a one-page version for our Russian speakers. So it's a trial and error thing, kind of see what kind of feedback that we get. And yeah, so we I mentioned briefly our Tablets and Technology program. That was a grant-funded initiative through JFNA that was really successful. We were able to put an iPad in the hands of almost all of our clients and teach a basic class as well as advanced classes. That grant ended. There's some opportunity for some future funding to be able to start that up again. My hope with that is we'll be able to continue to cover internet costs for our low-income clients and teach more people how to use Zoom, especially. That seems to be everybody's favorite platform. It's my favorite too.
It's our favorite.
And with, yeah, Zoom seems to be the thing that is going the smoothest right now. So, yeah,
I see a lot of questions here.
Getting internet for people is challenging. It's a cost for sure. Yeah.
Any feedback, Meredith, about Cafe Europa without food? We have another question about the maximum number of people that participate in the virtual classes, if there feels like maybe there's a good number. And then also about technology distribution, like who got what, and if it matters if they're all on the same kind of technology.
So all of the people in our Tablets and Technology program got iPads, I think the same model of iPads, but other people have their own smart devices, like a smartphone, or they use a laptop or a desktop computer also. So there's a variety of different things. You know, I think our staff are most comfortable with iPhones versus Androids. I don't think any of us use Androids. So we haven't explored how to work with that for including that people who would use that in our programs.
How did you teach people to use Zoom remotely?
Well, so we haven't. That's been the thing. That's why we're not using Zoom and we're mostly using Skype and FaceTime, because those are things there was already at least a basic level of understanding. I think that we'll probably be doing Zoom classes probably one-on-one in people's homes as that becomes safer. We are doing some home visits right now. So I think that will be something we'll incorporate on a one-on-one basis, which will be a lot more time consuming than having everybody come to the office and watch on a PowerPoint and play along. So I think it'll be a challenge. I really like the idea that somebody said about making a YouTube video on how to use Zoom. YouTube's been one of the favorite technologies that people in the tablets program learned. See lots of our Russian and our English speakers.
Meredith, I think it's cool a good investment, though, in your clients, right? So one-on-one, hopefully they can learn it in one session, but that could be difficult, you know, I don't know.
Easier said than done, maybe.
Absolutely.
And I see Gail mentioned that Oats in New York has Zoom instructions translated into Russian. Gail, if you can get those to Lisa and Victoria and I, we can get it in the library and make sure we all have access to that. That would be great.
Yeah, I would love to see that. So briefly, outside of our Holocaust programming, we have a Russian Jewish Cultural Center that is using, I think, Zoom and Skype both. Is that right, Anne? They're using both? Yeah, to do programming pretty much every day. I think there's a membership fee associated with the Russian Jewish Cultural Center, and we have a lot of crossover in clients. So I think we're offering a lot. Can't wait till we can offer more. There was one more question, I think. Maybe not.
Did I miss one? I could.
Oh, somebody about food, you said.
Yeah, about Cafe Europa. And we also heard from Lisa in Baltimore that they had Shabbat meals delivered to people's homes. That's awesome. And that's a Friday afternoon song session. That's very cool.
I like what Carol said, Laura, I like what Carol said, that she has volunteers who by telephone coach survivors how to download and use Zoom. Do those people have a guidebook that they follow? Carol?
So
here's, do they have a guidebook?
Yeah, hi. Not an official guidebook. These are Russian-speaking volunteers who can help both the Russian-speaking survivors and the English-speaking survivors. One is from MIT, so they're very technologically savvy. And that being said, it's successful with some people, and then other times what happens is they discover that the device that the survivor has is too old to support Zoom. So when that happens, it's the beginning of a conversation to see how it goes. But it's very exciting. It's very exciting. Yeah.
And where are you calling it? Where's your...
Oh, we're in Waltham. Boston, Waltham. Yeah.
Okay, Massachusetts.
I would like to make a comment to the person who asked about Cafe Europa programming and the meals. So most of our, we have, most of our programs don't have any meals, but we did have one party. We ordinarily have an independent July, Independence Day party. So on July 1st, we had an entertainment that was over Zoom. That was a man and his son singing and playing the piano, and they liked that. That was very nice. But what we did special, which required a tremendous amount of effort, was we got our, just taking a little water. We got our caterer to package individual meals for the party. And we had our driver who usually drives the senior, well, we have a senior center, so it's partly Cafe Europa and partly Holocaust survivors and partly senior citizens. So he usually drives those who don't drive themselves to the center. So in this occasion, since we're not in the building at all, and we're doing everything on Zoom, he drove some of the meals to the individual homes. And then we had three other volunteers who also drove the meals. So the meals got delivered to the home. But I have to say, it was quite an amount of effort, but they were very, very happy because they all had their meals at the same time. It's just that they were all in their own home. But that was a one-time thing. It's a lot of effort. Can't do that all the time.
Right. Can't do that all the time.
Thanks so much for sharing, Pearl. And you know, we were gonna have one more presenter, Amy from Atlanta had offered to share, but I just wanna stop and make sure we have time to check in with each other. Does anyone else have anything they wanna share? Any questions, any concerns?
I actually wanted to bring up Nora's question about documentation and if anybody has any suggestions about kind of transitioning from paper to databases, if anybody has any good databases that they want to share with everybody here?
You mean any good forms that they want to share? Is that what you mean?
Or you no, like the database where they can enter the client's information.
Oh. You mean what people are using in their agencies as a database?
Yes. Yeah.
What are
it
people
could be doing? A whole other conversation.
Yeah, we started switching in Edmonton from paper to EasyCare platform, which was developed in Toronto, but we just in the kind of trial process. Actually, I was wondering if someone who happened to use this platform, EasyCare, if someone has experience, that would be wonderful if someone can share with me in a through email, maybe, if you guys can have any experience with EasyCare managing the database of the clients.
Are you talking about paperwork, like on the tablets or something like that? I'm confused.
Like if you're doing an assessment, how are you in, where are you inputting it in since nobody is able to work from the office? And it kind of sounds like maybe a bigger conversation that maybe we should have a theme around next time, if anybody's open to that. Okay, I'm seeing a lot of head nods over there. So how about then we put maybe a pin on it and maybe pick it up with our next session, and then we can figure out, you guys can reach out to us to let us know which systems you're using, and then maybe we can do again like a quick presentation of like what's working, what's not working, and see like if that can be helpful for other agencies.
Okay, great. I can do a survey monkey, a really quick 1, 2, 3, and figure that out. People can say what they're using. And then I can get it to you both before the next meeting.
Great.
Okay.
Amy, thanks for agreeing to share. I just didn't want to take us till the like last minute, but I know Atlanta's doing wonderful things too.
Yeah, we've unfortunately, we don't have these impressive programs that some of you have, these databases. We really had no virtual programming before this happened at all. So we had to pivot. I'll just tell you real quickly, because I know we only have a couple minutes, but we had no virtual programming beforehand. And within a couple weeks, our AgeWell coordinators, so we have AgeWell, similar to, I think, Cincinnati and Pittsburgh and other, and our Holocaust Survivor Services social programming coordinators started putting together virtual programming themselves, starting from 7 events a week to now we're partnering with the JCC and that it keeps expanding so that there's 16 a week. There, many of them are very interactive. They're open to everybody in the community, all older adults. We do have 2 programs per week that are just for survivors. We have a chat room just for English-speaking survivors, and we have a chat room for Russian-speaking survivors. These are not support groups. There's just social chat. They can talk about whatever they want. Our social programming coordinator has also gotten groups of French-speaking survivors together and brought in somebody from the outside that spoke French to lead discussions in French. We just had started some classes in Yiddish, and some of the survivors have really liked that. We did do one Cafe Europa at the beginning, and then we kind of got away from Cafe Europa, and actually we're doing a Cafe Europa this month, and we are delivering lunches to everybody, which is much more coordination. The caterer is going to bring the food to our office, and then we have volunteer drivers that are going to be delivering food to everybody. So I'll let you know how that goes. I don't know if that will be an ongoing thing every month. We do offer Cafe Europa every month. I wanted to say, you know, we up front, the case manager started calling people and doing a needs assessment from the very beginning, and they asked people about their ability to connect virtually, found out who had internet, who didn't have computers, who didn't have tablets, that kind of thing. We are in the process through a grant to our older adult division, ordering tablets and Uniper for older adults, not just survivors. But we found very little interest in technology from our clients. So I haven't heard that from a lot of you, but when we contact them, they don't want these things. They don't want to do virtual programming. So, you know, we put out a newsletter, we put in the Zoom instructions, and even people that do have access, a lot of them aren't interested. And then when we offer opportunities for access, people aren't interested also. Hmm. So we're trying to do some different things that are not necessarily ongoing things, but we're doing pop-up concerts.
What happened?
So once a month now, we get volunteers to go out to people's homes and do mini concerts on their driveways. And sometimes if we have survivors that live close to each other, they sit on the same driveways. We do have to get waivers from every client that they understand the risks associated. But everybody is wearing, the entertainer's not wearing a mask because they're usually playing an instrument or singing. But they're spaced out, they're outdoors, and the survivor is either on their patio, their balcony, or something, so they're socially distanced. We're also, we do have in the agency a phone friend program, so we can refer survivors to a volunteer. And in general, you know, our case managers are just calling everybody a lot more frequently to check in and stay connected. And we're also really trying to send people more things in the mail. So we do cards. We are sending out puzzle books in the next couple of weeks. I mean, we are hand making these puzzle books. We're sending out Rosh Hashanah goodies. We got a publisher of a Russian magazine to give us copies of a Russian magazine, and we're going to send it out to people who speak Russian and ask them if they're interested in continuing to get the magazine. So things like that. But I think the biggest challenge is that we have a lot of clients that aren't interested in virtual programming.
I so appreciate you sharing, Amy. And I think that's such a good reminder to us that we have other media at our disposal, not just the interwebs, not just the World Wide Web, right? Other things. Well, thank you all so much. It's 2:30 Central Time, probably 3:30 where you all are. And where Victoria is, it's like 10:30 in the morning. So who knows what time it is? We're in a pandemic. I don't even know. Anyway, it's so good to see everyone's face. It's so good always to share and listen to best practice. There's so much wisdom here. And I'm just grateful that we get to share it with each other. I hope everyone has a good rest of their week. Thank you so much to our speakers for sharing, for being so brave.
And our next meet you is on October 8th.
October 8th. Okay.
October 8th. So happy holidays, right?
Oh my gosh. After we'll be in a new year.
A new year. That's right. Easy. Okay. It was great to see everyone. You can always keep in touch. Email me. Anything
Thanks you want so to share much. With the Bye, everyone. Library.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.